listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time to study the daily New Testament lesson. And our guest pastor today, Pastor Robert Pace from Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. Pastor Pace, welcome to His Time.
Thank you, Andy. Very blessed day to you as well.
Well, thank you. Looking forward to studying God's Word with you this day and looking at Luke chapter 6 today. What would, well, tell us about Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas.
Well, in Midland, Texas, as in most of Texas, Lutherans are kind of hard to find as compared to up in St. Louis and the other areas. But Grace has been a congregation here in Midland. We're in our 86th year. We are a very caring congregation. We have a accredited preschool that basically has a waiting list that people show up at 4:30 in the morning to get in line for one of our open spots. We're undergoing a capital campaign right now, and we're expanding our building and to help our growing families, for family life ministry and children. 3.5 million addition that's being built right as I speak. They're out there working today. So it's a congregation of a lot of folks come into Midland because of the oil patch, the oil business work, but it's a great place to raise kids, and we are offering a very solid message of the gospel of Christ in this world, this part of Texas, and we are very blessed to, again, be in our 86th year here and looking forward to the blessings the Lord has us for us as we work toward our 100th anniversary.
Well, thanks be to God for the ministry of Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. We're studying Luke chapter 6 today, verses 1 through 19. Pastor, what would you like for us to know as we prepare to study this text in Luke 6?
Well, I would say two things, Andy. First, this passage is recorded in all three of the synoptics in both Luke 6, parallels Matthew 12 and Mark 2. And so we put it on a higher plane of importance when all three Gospels cover the same teachings. Obviously, there's differences in what each of the Gospels cover because of the perspective of the writers. We're looking at the beginning of the second year of Jesus' public ministry.
All right, Luke chapter 6 is where we are today, beginning at the first verse. Let's take a look at the text. On a Sabbath, while he was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" And Jesus answered them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those with him?" And he said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." So here we are on a Sabbath. While he was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. And some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" Why is it not lawful to pluck and eat grain on the Sabbath, Pastor?
Well, it was not lawful because according to Deuteronomy, what they were doing, Deuteronomy 23, specifically 24 and 25, verses 24 and 25, do allow to pluck grain for the senses of eating. But when they were rubbing, according to the Pharisaic law, they were reaping, and that was work. And Exodus 20:10 says, "You shall not work on the Sabbath." So they were breaking that letter of the law by rubbing it together. They were reaping.
But some of so Jesus answered them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those with him?" So Jesus used an example of David.
Yes, and that is a from 1 Samuel chapter 21. In which David was just a few miles north of Bethlehem and Nob and did exactly what Jesus said. It is interesting that in the context of chapter 6, obviously we have to go back to chapter 5, where Jesus was criticized for being too lax on ceremonial law, being who he's eating dinner with, and allowing his disciples not to fast. and it was the Pharisees. And here it said some of the Pharisees. So while all the Pharisees were attacking him in 5, only some of them were attacking him here in 6. And David did take some of that showbread. Now we have to understand that it was not the bread that was in use in the ceremonies of the tabernacle, but it was those loaves that have already been done served their purpose, and they were set to the side, in which, according to the law, the letter of the law, only the priests were allowed to eat. And Jesus, by asserting the King David here, he is making a Christological assertion. He's comparing himself to David. And as David was seen as the precursor of the Messiah, that the Messiah would be another King David, he is making the statement that I am like David, which I'm sure did not go well with the Pharisees.
And verse 5, he said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath."
Jesus' favorite term for himself in all the Gospels is Son of Man. In Luke's Gospel, the first time that phrase Son of Man is mentioned is back in chapter 5, and in the same context now, because it's the same audience that he's talking to, he uses it again. And this phrase, Son of Man, there's actually, it's a paradox, because when we think the Son of Man, we naturally think of the humanity of Jesus, but it's both. We can take the parallel, recall in Ezekiel, the term Son of Man. In Ezekiel's prophecy, that term Son of Man is used 93 times, and it would be a reference to the humanity of Jesus. But in the book of Daniel, the Son of Man is a divine term. And so we need to see the Son of Man, that phrase Son of Man, while it is Jesus' favorite term for himself, and I remember learning as a kid, being told that it was a reference to the humanity of Jesus, it is a reference to his humanity and his divinity. On the point about him being Lord of the Sabbath, we need to understand that just because he says he is Lord of the Sabbath, that doesn't mean he has the attitude of, I'm the boss, I can do whatever I want here, you can't tell me what to do. He is the perfect Son of God on this earth to do the will of his Father. And in Galatians chapter 4, Paul writes in verse 4 that when the time was right, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law. So Jesus is not usurping the law. He is showing the Pharisees the other side of that law coin, not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law, which will be seen clearly in the next section, the next verses.
Let's take a look at verse 6. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he rose and stood there, and Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to destroy it?" And after looking around at them, all he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he said, and he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. So here we have another Sabbath. He goes into the synagogue teaching, and there was a man whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched to see what Jesus would do if he would heal on a Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him.
It is interesting here, a couple points that jumped out to me as I was studying this. Luke uses the definite article, he entered the synagogue, which makes us wonder, which one is Luke referring to? It wasn't just a synagogue, but it was the synagogue. So was it one that Jesus went to often? and was would have been well known. We don't know, but it's, and as he was teaching, the scribes and Pharisees watched. They weren't just watching what he was doing with the man, but the word "watch" there is in the imperfect tense in the Greek. So they were watching him from the get-go, from the time he walked into the synagogue. That they weren't concerned about, as they should have been, about the worship going on in the synagogue. They weren't definitely not concerned about the plight of this man who had a withered hand, and we can think of what it means to be to have something withered. That's a long-standing condition that takes a while for something to be withered. Luke is the only other. Again, Matthew and Mark have this account, but Luke, and most scholars say, well, because he was a doctor, says it was the right hand. Mark and Matthew just says it was a hand, but and personally, I'm left-handed, so always bothers me when the right hand gets precedence over the left hand. But the right hand, that he would have been useless to do things, and that this condition was something that just didn't happen overnight, that the nerves got hardened and damaged and it took a while to be withered, and literally, quote, there was nothing anyone could do.
So the Pharisees and the scribes try to find a reason to accuse him, but he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here," and he rose and stood there.
This too is interesting, because we get a picture of what's happening, and if you read it carefully, the picture is not what we have. When teaching was taking place in a synagogue, everybody was sitting. The teacher here, Jesus, would have been sitting in an elevated position, like we have most of our pulpits are raised up, so he could be seen and heard, but everybody was sitting. So when he said, "Come and stand here," that's a little, in the English, the ESV, it's a little confusing. It can be a little confusing. He didn't say, "Come here and stand." He said, "Come and stand here." A better translation or understanding of the translation here would be, "Stand up where you're at," so everybody could see him. And the paradox here is the Pharisees and the scribes had been watching Jesus. They've been watching him and trying to entrap him and catch him in something. And so Jesus turns the tables on them and says, "I'm going to have this guy stand up." And so he is, and then Jesus is going to turn and he's going to be watching everybody as he's about to heal this man. He's vindicating his role as the Messiah here. He is not he's not doing anything except speaking in this act of healing. He didn't call the man over to him to touch him. He is just going to say, "Stretch out your hand," and the hand's going to be healed.
And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to destroy it?"
Here Jesus is, he's answering the questions that should have been asked. And like the perfect Lord, he can get away with that. Most times when we ask a question and somebody rephrases the question for us, we can get angry and say, "That's not what we asked." But Jesus is literally asking the question that should have been asked, and he is pointing out the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. They're guilty on both points. They're not doing good; they're doing harm, and they're seeking to destroy life. They have no room for mercy. It's just what the law says.
And after looking around at them all, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus.
And after looking around at them all, everybody in the synagogue got a glimpse of the look Jesus was giving. And I wonder, what was the look he was giving? We often wonder that. Like in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he said they looked at Peter, what look did he give to Peter? What tone of voice did he say to Mary on Easter morning. This is another one. What kind of look? I see it as he's looking at them going, please don't listen to these guys. Believe who I say I am. Let the facts show that I am the Messiah. Stretch out your hand, and the hand was restored. Interesting that all three of the Gospels who have this account use the exact same word here for restored, which means to be brought back to the former condition. It was completely the way it was before. In the face of severe criticism, Jesus doesn't back down. He shows mercy, and look at the result. They were filled with fury. What does fury mean? You almost say anger to the sense of being insane about it. No sense, no reason. They discuss what they might do. We know what they wanted to do, but this is still early in his ministry. Again, the beginning of the second year. So the idea of killing him is maybe in the back of their mind, but it's not on the front of their mind. But they were just so filled with fury, or I guess another word we could use would be rage. They were not thinking clearly. They were not responding. They were reacting.
We're studying the Daily New Testament reading with Pastor Robert Pace from Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. We're in Luke chapter 6 today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue studying in Luke chapter 6, picking up around verse 12. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia Historical Institute continues to move Lutheran history forward. A Lutheran pastor once said that changing history is history lost. And Concordia Historical Institute continues to serve the church and the community by not only collecting and preserving historical documents, artifacts, fine art associated with Lutheran history, but also sharing those with the church and community. See us at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
One easy way to share the hope and comfort we have in Christ is through liturgical cards and art. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts provides that assurance as each card contains a Bible verse meant to bring comfort to the receiver. The cards can be used throughout the year. Agnus Dei Arts selection of reproductions are also perfect for your home, your pastor, seminary students, or confirmation. AgnusDeiArts.com. That's AgnusDei Arts.com.
We make difficult Bible passages cry uncle.
We put the chokehold on contemporary issues.
We put the chokehold on contemporary issues?
No, sorry, I panicked. It's all I could think of on the spur of the moment.
We're Wrestling with the Basics, Saturday mornings at 9:04 on KFUO AM 850. We put the fun in the fundamentals.
Saturday mornings at 9 on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Listening to His Time, I'm Andy Bates. We're studying the Daily New Testament reading with Pastor Robert Pace from Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. We're in Luke chapter 6 today. Pastor, anything else about verses 1 through 11 before we go on to the next section?
Well, I would say that the idea of the Sabbath is important, and the letter of the law is important. We can't dismiss the letter of the law because we're following the spirit of the law. The law is the law, and as baptized Christians, the moral law here being worship of the Lord, the Sabbath, is important to remember.
All right, Luke chapter 6, verse 12. In these days he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples and chose from them 12, whom he named apostles. Simon, whom he named Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, and John, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, who was called the Zealot, and Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. So in these days he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God.
Again, it is interesting that back in verse 6 he entered the synagogue. Here Luke says to Theophilus and to us as well that he went up to the mountain to pray. Must have been a very well-known mountain. It wasn't a mountain. Was this the mountain that he went to as well? As we'll see later on, is this the same mountain where he preached the Sermon on the Mount? And this is Luke's account of it, and it's not two different sermons, but one. And he went a night and continued in prayer to God. We want to speculate, what did he pray about? But truly, we can only speculate. We don't know what he prayed about because Luke does not tell us what he prayed about. We could say, well, he prayed about what he's going to pick his disciples into and make them into apostles. Well, they're going to need prayer on that. Or he may have been praying about what he just encountered with the Pharisees and the man with the withered hand and the criticism he was beginning to receive. But we don't know. But he shows us, as he does throughout his gospel, Luke shows the importance that Jesus took time to be in prayer to God. And just a quick reminder of how much do we pray. I know sometimes when I pray the common table prayer, it's almost like I'm saying, on you, Marcus, set, go, because I'm praying it so fast. It's like, no, he prayed all night. And if the Lord prayed all night, boy, is my prayer life measly.
Hmm. And so when day came, he called his disciples and chose from them 12, whom he named apostles.
Yeah, we often think that Jesus only had 12 disciples. No, he had 12 whom he has appointed and named apostles. He had hundreds of disciples, as we see this is 2 weeks after Easter, so a couple more weeks, Ascension Day. There were 500 gathered around, at least 500 on that day. But he named them apostles. Again, that word apostle means one sent with the commission, with the authority, like in the military, a commission, you get power and you get responsibility. So these 12 out of the who knows how many he had at this point were given special privilege. And as any parent will tell their child, and so our Heavenly Father tells his children, with privilege comes responsibility.
Hmm.
And we'll see what that commission is in chapter 9 of Luke. Because he'll specifically state that it's to preach and heal, drive out demons. And that in chapter 9, he specifically states what it is.
And so here we see who those 12 are: Simon, whom he named Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, and John, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called Zealot, and Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor.
Yes. And here, you know, the critics of the Bible who love to point out the differences and point them out because they have an agenda that they don't like the Bible. Yes, there are differences in the lists of the 12 from the other synoptics, from John as well, that they don't mean clearly that there's not a contradiction. Some of the major differences is well, what language is being used? Is it the Hebrew name or the Aramaic name? And looking at the other gospel, like, you know, Bartholomew there at the end of verse 14, well, he's also known as Nathanael, James, son of Alphaeus, known as James the Lesser, because he's not as good as James, the son of Zebedee. Simon the Zealot is interesting. Simon, who was called the Zealot, because literally in the Greek it reads Simon the Canaan. And in that area, there were a lot of zealots in that area. So the ones who do the translations make it zealot and put it with a capital Z. But that's not what the Greek literally says. But he is from an area where most of the zealots had their camp. And of course, Judas Iscariot, how many people do you know who named their kids Judas? About the same amount of parents who named their kids Adolf anymore. And Judas was a, obviously, Judas, the son of James. And that is Judas Iscariot, who became the traitor. Judas was a very common name in first century Holy Land in Israel. And because of what Judas Iscariot ended up doing, who became a traitor, they started shortening that name, and instead of calling him Judas, the common name became Jude.
Anything else about up through verse 16 before we look at this last section here, Pastor?
Well, again, I just, you know, just looking at the of the name, that there were 12. Luke just lists them. Others list them in the brother pairs, and he's not listing. He's in any order of importance. He's just making the list of these are the of the hundreds. These are the 12 that were apostles.
Verse 17, and he came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the seacoast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured, and all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all. So he came down with them and stood at a level place, a great crowd of disciples and a great multitude of people from all of the area, Judea and Jerusalem, seacoast of Tyre and Sidon, came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases.
Yeah, this again, is this the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Luke's version, Luke's account of it? Scholars differ. Is the Sermon on the Plain different on the Sermon on the Mount? But if you look closely, I would say that it is the same sermon, especially if you look at the context of what follows after verse 19 as he begins a teaching, but that's not our text. But he came down with them and stood on level plain. So in Matthew 5, we have Jesus going up to a mountain. Well, Jesus had been up on the mountain to pray all night, and his disciples were brought to him, in which he named 12 to be apostles. Now he's coming down from the mountain, and you can picture standing on the ledge of the mountain, on the hill, on a level place of the mountain, and the people below who are gathering from Luke showing us the vast popularity. Jesus, again, being the second year of ministry, was known as the year of popularity, and we've seen already the beginning of this chapter that the opposition was ramping up as well. But you can see that he's not just coming from the former southern kingdom of Judea and Jerusalem, but from the seacoast. Folks are flocking to Jesus to come and to hear and be healed. And we see here that, again, we don't have to have a contradiction between Matthew chapter 5 and Luke chapter 6. It does not have to go there, and I don't think it fits as a contradiction. Matthew, again, just repeating, Matthew, Jesus goes up on a mountain, and here he's already on the mountain, and he's coming down and stands at a level place, and he'll begin to teach. But before he teaches, notice what he does. He heals everyone who came. Their diseases, those who were bothered, troubled, with unclean spirits, demons were cured. And what it's really interesting, again, to me, because the connection with the first part of this chapter, Jesus was showing his mercy in face of criticism of those who saying, no, the letter of the law doesn't allow mercy here. Well, the letter of the law would not allow verse 19 to take place at all, where the crowd sought to touch him. But if these people are sick with disease or demons, they're unclean. And by touching Jesus, they would make him unclean. But they didn't care. They needed healing. They needed the presence of Jesus. And Jesus didn't care. He didn't have handlers, sort of like our presidential candidates. Donald Trump got into trouble with one of his campaign people pushing someone away from him. Jesus didn't have Secret Service around him. If someone wanted to come up and touch him, he would allow them to do it. It didn't hinder him. The attitude of the Pharisees didn't hinder him. The people coming around him didn't hinder him. He was here on a mission of mercy, and nothing was going to stop him from completing that mission.
And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured, and all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all.
The power came out. We would say, you know, that does the power just come out like if you stick something in a light socket? Well, no. You believe the power is going to be there. These people were coming. They had heard of Jesus. They had heard the stories, and the power was coming out. Because the Lord was allowing it to come out. It was not just flowing freely as if he did not have control over it. We saw earlier that he's the Lord of the Sabbath. He is the Lord of creation. He is the Lord of the power he has. And the crowd was sought to touch him. Did they actually get to him? The context that what Luke seems to be picturing here is the crowd was so big that some of the people couldn't get to him, but notice how it ends. He healed them all. Anyone who was coming to Jesus before he began teaching, he did not ignore human suffering. He first reached out to them all. And if you look at it, if I am got a cough, am I going to be listening to someone's message? No, I'm going to get my cough taken care of first, and then I'm going to be able to listen clearer because my cough is gone. Jesus took care of their physical ailments first so that he could have full attention when he began speaking to them, which begins in the next verse.
Looking over the text as a whole, Pastor, anything else that you'd like for us to learn from this text today?
Well, again, I would just emphasize again, Andy, that he is Lord. He is here for a mission, and he is going to instruct what his mission is. And he, in face of criticism, in face of people trying to get to him for the wrong reason, they want the show. And later on, we'll see through the Gospels, they really weren't interested in the message. But here he is. He is, in this passage from Luke 6, 1 through 19, he is asserting his role of Messiah. He is clearly showing, I am the Messiah. This is who I am. This is why I came. He is choosing 12 to help spread the message of who he is. And then he is, after he picks the 12 and he says, I am the Messiah, he is about to open his mouth and preach what most scholars call the Sermon on the Plain, because he's on a flat place, of Luke 6, beginning of verse, at the next verse in verse 20.
We've been studying the daily New Testament reading with Pastor Robert Pace from Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. Pastor Pace, thanks for being our guest pastor, helping us study this text in Luke chapter 6 today.
Well, again, it is my privilege. It was nice to take a break to study something that not assigned to be preached on for a Sunday. So it was a nice break for me to do a little extra study.
God bless you and all the saints at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, Texas. Coming up in just a little bit, our historically speaking with Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink or other friends from Concordia Historical Institute. Hope you can stick around for more His Time right here on Worldwide KFUO.